Welcome back. Sitting in for George Norrie, coming to you live from Coast's Toronto, Canada affiliate, Talk Radio AM 640. Say hello on Twitter at Richard Syrett, S-Y-R-E-T-T. If these harmonies sound familiar, well, they should. Just drift back. Drift back into the murky past about 50 years, actually. Michael Nesmith and Mickey Dolenz of the Monkees. This is a song called Birth of an Accidental Hipster that was released as part of their, I think, one of the best albums of 2016. I swear to God, it was the 50th anniversary of the Monkees. The surviving members, Peter Tork, Mickey Dolenz, Michael Nesmith, got together, put out this album, and they even included a track from the late Davy Jones. But there were so many Monkey fans in the music industry that wanted to be a part of this album, that were offering lyrics to songs and so forth. And this particular track, Birth of an Accidental Hipster, was actually penned by Noel Gallagher and Paul Weller, I guess, who made his bones in The Jam, a couple of great British tunesmiths, to be sure. All right. We are about to embark on 2 hours of open lines, and you get to steer this thing just about anywhere you'd like. I wanted to offer up a story that for inspiration that our webmaster tonight, Sean Latasore, has posted in the carousel, and it's inspired by a story earlier in the summer, a coast to coast story about a haunted couch that's on display at a furniture store in Waco, Texas. It was a Coast to Coast listener, Chris, and his girlfriend, Joni, who went to the shop to get a glimpse of the strange couch for themselves. And despite a pair of signs actually warning customers about sitting on the possessed sofa, this daring duo decided to take the risk, and they plopped down on the couch, which is infamous for spawning paranormal activity, as well as its eerie blood stain and bullet hole. And adding one more element of high strangeness to the visit, Chris tells us here at Coast to Coast that his girlfriend is a sensitive, and she knew where the bullet hole and blood stain were without knowing they were even there. She said she felt a tingling on her left side, and when she lifted up that pillow, the blood stain was there. I thought that's a great story that could lead into some discussion about haunted items, haunted objects, possessed objects. That's just a log that we can throw on the fire. Obviously, a lot to discuss, and you'll tell me where you want to take this. Again, open lines now for the duration. Hey, if you like what you're hearing tonight, this morning, I want to invite you to check out my weekly syndicated radio program, The Conspiracy Show. We talk about veal recipes. No, we talk about the conspiracies and the paranormal, of course. And it airs Sunday nights at 11 p.m. Eastern out of Toronto on a 50,000-watt clear channel. It's a blowtorch of a station called Zoomer Radio, AM 740. In fact, you can pick that signal up through much of the eastern United States after dark, Maine to Minnesota, south to the Carolinas, and we also have about 35 affiliates across North America. For more information, visit my website, strangeplanet.ca, and we also live stream on YouTube most Sunday nights. The YouTube channel is The Conspiracy Show with Richard Syrett. Don't forget to hit the sub button. Say hello on Twitter again, at Richard Syrett. Please follow back with your amazing phone calls when Coast to Coast AM continues right after this. Hey, welcome back. And before we venture into open lines, I just want to send out thanks again to Don Jeffries, who joined us in the first 2 hours to talk about JFK. Wasn't he amazing? You know, we have a saying up here in Canada, the Great White North, about, you know, people like Don, who just come to play each and every time. We say they always put the puck in the net. And that's about as high a compliment as you can pay to someone up here in the land of 6 months of winter and 6 months of bad skating. I just wanted to read this email that I just received from Paul. Awesome, you played Rodriguez. I knew that dude years ago, lived in the Cass Corridor, Wayne Street area of Detroit in the 80s, and he'd, Rodriguez, would hang with us at our Sunday neighborhood picnics and hawk his CDs. He even ran for Detroit mayor once. Dang, I miss those days. Check out an indie movie called Searching for Sugar Man. Awesome story about Rodriguez's disappearance into obscurity and eventual comeback. Anyway, thanks for the little memory jog. That's right. I was flying to, I believe, Salt Lake City, and I saw the in-flight movie Well, you get to choose. They don't have in-flight movies anymore. You choose. Anyway, that's the one I saw, Searching for Sugar Man. And I thought that was a mockumentary. For the first, I would say, half of the movie, I thought it was a mockumentary. They were making this up, and lo and behold, it's true. And Sugar Man Rodriguez is alive and well, and was just here in Toronto performing, and I missed him. I can't believe it. I missed him. Anyway, if you ever get a chance to see Rodriguez, you know, a lot of artists that came out of the early 1970s were sort of saddled with the moniker the next Bob Dylan, people like John Prine. And I think perhaps the one that came closest, really, and maybe even in some sense surpassed Dylan in terms of lyrics and arrangements, was Rodriguez. Only put out a couple of albums and then again disappeared into obscurity, but he's been rediscovered, and definitely worth the listening. All right, let us head on into our open line segment, and let's begin with Ingrid in Tucson, Arizona on the wild card line. Good morning, Ingrid.
Hi, I've got a very unique story.
I love unique stories.
Well, it was on YouTube. I know you can't believe everything you hear, but it was so fantastic that I couldn't stop watching. It was saying that there were seven hitmen to kill Kennedy, and it was put up with, I'm trying to get hurrying to this. Bush was involved, the Dulce brothers, Nixon was the boy from Hoover, he was called Hoover's boy. All these people knew about this. Giancana hated Kennedy. And Woody Harrelson's father was one of them. And the kill shot came from a drain in the street that all the other people missed him. They hit the throat thing, and it was definitely not Oswald. But then the girlfriend that your guest was talking about, your host,
Judith Berry Baker, yes, yes.
Yes, well, she said that Johnson told her that he was going to a meeting, and all these men who hated Kennedy, they set this up. And the grossest thing of all is Officer Tidbit, you know, the guy who shot up...
Officer Tidbit, yes, yes.
The grossest thing is that when he was in the ambulance, they switched it to another ambulance, and they had this cleanup guy who did surgery and put his face on Kennedy all during the flight where they took him away. And that it's just amazing what all was involved, the surgery. And then Jacqueline Kennedy said, that's not my husband. But it was all these people were involved. There was way more, but I can't remember. It was a 2.5 or something like that video. I think it was called The Men Who Killed Kennedy.
Right. Well, I don't know if you heard all of my conversation with Don Jeffries. We discussed, you know, the whole Poppy Bush angle, and I don't know. Bush swore he wasn't in Dallas on that date. There is that photograph. However, it's pretty, I would say, circumstantial. Now, the seven guns, that I have no doubt. I mean, I think they, as Don Jeffries alluded, they were lined up around the block for a chance to take a shot at Jack Kennedy. He was in enemy territory when he ventured into Texas. He had great reservations about going there. I think he probably sensed that something was going to go down. Unfortunately, he was right. There are a number of people that have sort of come out recently, I would say within the last 10 years, and claim that they were part of the hit team. I didn't get a chance to ask Don about James Files, who is languishing in prison in Joliet, Illinois, for killing a cop. And he claims that he was the one that fired the fatal headshot. He was on the grassy knoll, and he was to back up, I guess it was it Charles Nicoletti? If I have the first name right, Nicoletti was part of the Giancana gang. And I believe Nicoletti was supposed to be on the Dell Tech building and was supposed to fire the fatal shot, and James Files claims he was there as backup. So it's hard to separate, as I say, the wheat from the chaff. You have so many loose threads and so many seemingly contradictory storylines and so forth. That's why we are really in a race against time, because there are so few people who actually even remember anymore. So I was very interested to learn from from Don Jeffries that Michael and Ruth Payne are still alive. My word, that would be an interesting interview. Michael was a Bell helicopter employee. They were palling around with Lee Harvey Oswald and Marina, took them under their wing, which is very, very interesting, that relationship. Why would they get involved? All right, let's see. Oh, thank you so much for the call, incidentally. Let's see, who do we have coming up next? We have Bruce is in Southern California on the wildcard line. Good morning, Bruce. Welcome to Coast.
Thank you, Richard, and thank you for taking my call. And I just want to kind of add a little about what Don was saying. He brought up some amazing points. But what I want to talk about is the significance today, even though this event happened 54 years ago, to close our eyes to what happened then means closing our eyes to what's happening right now and our future. There are cover-ups that are taking place right now that most people don't even know about it. I also want to talk about the word conspiracy theory, because that word is always called or talked about when you ever talk about these events or 9/11. And you can, don't believe me, but you can look this up yourself. That word was actually made popular and invented by the CIA in 1967 as a weapon to avoid investigation for fear of truth.
That's right. What happened was, after the Warren Commission came out, they did all sorts of polling and found that very few Americans actually believed in the Warren Report. And so the CIA issued this memo to go after anyone that was attacking the Warren Report and label them with the term conspiracy theorist.
Absolutely.
Which continues to be a way to kind of
keep the population dumb. But talking about conspiracy theories, I believe this is the biggest lie and conspiracy theory ever posed on the American people, and the world for that matter, by our controlled media, and the fact that 19 radicals armed with box cutters, you know, you buy for 99 cents, defeated our multi-billion dollar air defense system while conspiring with a diabetic bearded man in a cave in Afghanistan, not to mention no weapons of mass destruction. But the point I'm trying to make is, you know, we can't look at these past events and just shrug them off as past. This is our future, because this is just cover-ups are happening. They're getting more sophisticated, and it's time for American people to wake up and start learning the truth. And learning the truth of the past will open your eyes to what's happening right now and in the future. And
that's well said, Bruce. Well said. Thank you for that. Yeah, the term conspiracy theory is obviously being used by many in the mainstream media or in academia to stifle debate, to shut down a debate. The other term that gets tossed around a lot these days with regards to the whole global warming or climate change argument is to use that word denier, which is odious. It's to use that term denier because of the connection to Holocaust denial, which of course is absolutely odious and evil. But so then to apply the term denier to someone who simply questions official orthodoxy on climate change is just wrong. Too often, conspiracy theorist is used in much the same way, just to stop a debate. But it's not working, I don't think. It's not as effective as it once was. People just kind of shake that off and say, you know, that doesn't work on me anymore. I just view things like the Kennedy assassination. I think that's just the way, by and large, the world works. You know, if we go back 1,000 years, when you had competing houses, let's say in England, that were vying for the throne. You know, had the War of the Roses. And, you know, a lot of blood was spilled. They didn't try to hide it. It was all done out in plain sight. And I think that's still the way things operate in terms of power structures, except now they're just more sophisticated. And all of that stuff that used to happen out on the main stage now happens sort of quietly and behind closed doors. And it's not necessarily a shiv in someone's back. It's you get your hedge fund manager or managers to raid someone's financial system in another country. You can bring a country down, you know, by attacking their stock market or their currency. assassinations now are a little different. Not always. Sometimes they pull the same thing off that they did in 63. But there are other ways to assassinate. I think Watergate, for example, was a form of assassination. That's how they took Tricky Dick out. He dared to, love him or hate him, but he dared to deviate from the script. And when he could no longer be controlled, rather than take him out with a bullet, you take him out with a scandal, right? And as always, the cover-up is usually worse than the crime. That's how they got him. All right, let's say hi to, let's see, Donna is in North Carolina. Hi, Donna. Welcome to Coast AM.
Hi, Richard. Look, I still wanted to talk about Kennedy. I don't know why, but I can't shake it tonight. And I always
None of us out. Can, Donna. None of us can stop.
I always miss out on the guest. And so I'm glad you're interested in it. There's two things. I read a paperback book in the mid-90s. It was by a guy, I can't remember his whole name. I loaned the book out. Don't ever do that. But one of his names was Tex. He was from Texas. Now, he says, and it's a full-fledged book, had pictures and everything. He said that he taught shooting classes, all right? And he said that Jack Ruby and Lee Harvey Oswald came and took target lessons with him, shooting lessons. He said that, first of all, he said Jack called Lee Harvey Lee, never calling the Harvey, just Lee, referred to him as Lee. He said that Lee Harvey Oswald, and it was the same one, could not hit the side of a barn if he was leaned against it when he pulled the trigger. And he said that Jack Ruby had to get right up on something to be able to hit it before, you know, he could hit his target. He said he also had this thing with his arm, like the hand that held the gun. Right before he would pull the trigger, his arm would twitch back, you know. And he said that he saw that when he witnessed Ruby kill Lee Harvey on television. You could see his arm doing that same thing. I didn't know whether you'd ever heard from that. Also, this is in the late 60s, early 70s. On the Mike Douglas show, do you remember Mike Douglas?
Oh, I certainly do.
Okay, on the Mike Douglas show, now I saw this myself. He had Evelyn Lincoln, Kennedy's secretary, on there. And Evelyn Lincoln said that Kennedy was not going to go with Johnson for a running mate the next time he ran. He didn't want, Kennedy didn't want to.
That's
go
true. No, he wanted Johnson off the ticket. That's true.
Who?
I'm saying Kennedy wanted Johnson off the ticket. You're correct. I believe that to be the case, yes.
Do you know who he was thinking about? She said, well, one of them was Senator Terry Sanford from North Carolina. I remember that vividly. The thing I wanted to ask you is this. I go along the thing like, if it walks like a duck, and it quacks like a duck, and it looks like a duck,
it must be a chicken.
It's a grasshopper. It's a duck, right?
100%.
Why do you think his family, the Kennedys, kind of let it just all ride? I know Robert didn't. Well, I don't believe Robert was going to let it ride.
Well, I think we're heading into a break, but I think Jackie was in fear of her life. That's why she married married Onassis and was spirited away to some Greek island. I think she needed a protector. I think she was in fear of her life and her children's life. And as you say, Bobby, well, I think he was going to reopen the case, and he paid the ultimate price. Couldn't have that. So, we'll never know. All right, let's take a time out. We'll come back. Here's Audrey Hepburn. This is my favorite version. Andy Williams is great, but I just love Audrey Hepburn's version of Moon River from The Mighty Aphrodite's favorite movie, Breakfast at Tiffany's. All right, welcome back. Hey, just a reminder that Saturday night, Lisa Garr is stepping into the air chair, and she's going to talk about relationships and love. Gary Salyer and Robert O. Williams will join Lisa. They'll discuss relationships and how they've changed more in the past 30 years than they did in the past 3,000. In the dating world, you're just a click or a swipe. So again, joining Lisa Garr in the first half, psychology and marriage expert Dr. Gary Salyer will talk about learning to love, and that'll be followed by Robert Williams, an expert in the study of subtle energy engineering and its effect on physical systems, who will discuss how we can be powerful beyond our wildest imaginations. That's Lisa Garr in the air chair on Coast to Coast Saturday night. Make sure you stay tuned for that. When we come back, more open lines, and further to the story that Sean Latisore, our webmaster, posted in the carousel section about this haunted couch in Waco, Texas. I just wanted to mention something in case there are others out there who have a story to share about perhaps a haunted object or a possessed object. Here in Toronto, a number of years ago, I befriended a gentleman whose stage name is Vlad Isengrim. It's a wonderful name. And he had sort of carried on a family business. It was one of the oldest carnival sideshows in Canada. It was called Carnival Diablo. And one of the exhibits, or one of the artifacts that Vlad was in possession of, was a ventriloquist dummy that was called Waldo. And I believe he bought it at auction. There was a sort of a U.S. government warehouse auction. These were items that had been perhaps repossessed, or however they found their way into the government's possession. He bid on this lot, and one of the things that he ended up was with this ventriloquist doll, Waldo. And it started acting kind of strange. People would come into the circus sideshow and hear strange noises, and some people claim that they saw Waldo actually levitating and things like this. He did a little research and discovered that Waldo was a ventriloquist dummy dating back to vaudeville. And the person that first owned Waldo, he had it made. It was the same ventriloquist doll maker that had made Charlie McCarthy and Mortimer Snerd for the great ventriloquist Edgar Bergen. He had made this ventriloquist dummy, Waldo. The first owner died under the rather mysterious circumstances. He was due on stage. The stage manager came, knocked on his door. The door only locked from the inside. Kept knocking on the door. Finally, they had to break the door down, and they found the ventriloquist on the floor dead. There was no one else in the room. There was no windows. And the fable goes that they found little tiny fist marks all over his body. And, of course, there was Waldo sitting there on the desk. In another incident, this doll was handed down to a descendants of this ventriloquist. And their entire house was blown to smithereens. It was a natural gas explosion. And apparently the only thing that survived the inferno was Waldo. Upon further investigation, Vlad Isengrim found out that this ventriloquist doll, this wooden doll, had been fashioned from a tree that had once been used as a gallows. They used to hang criminals from this tree. Whether it's true or not, I don't know, but it's one heck of a good story. If you've got another story about a haunted or possessed object, the phone lines are open and available to you now. We'll get to the rest of your calls when Coast to Coast AM continues right after this. Welcome back to Coast, Richard Serrett filling in for George Norrie. And we are coming to you live from Coast, Toronto, Canada, Affiliate Talk Radio, AM 640. Say hello on Twitter at Richard Serrett. Wildcard line. Chase is in Seattle this morning. Good morning, Chase. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you doing, Rich?
Very well, thank you.
So I have a haunted story for you. I work at a truss plant here in Seattle, and I run a big auto Omni that cuts all the lumber for the trusses. And we got three Omnis, and I run the spare, you know, backup one, cut all the floors and stuff, and this saw originally came from Alaska.
All right.
Now, at first, you know, since it's a really run-down saw, you know, and the program's so old on it, it would have its problems, where the program would tweak out and all this other stuff to it. And, you know, so I would go to the maintenance guy, I mentioned it to him, he would come out. But as soon as he comes out, it stops doing what it's doing and works perfectly for him. But as soon as he walks away, not even 15 minutes later, it starts doing it again.
Does this only happen when you're using it, Chase, or have other people also mentioned this?
It only happens when I run it.
Ah.
Now, before, the other guy that ran it, you know, every once in a while, you know, the saw does, like every other saw, has its maintenance problems, you know, so they redo the maintenance on it, and then it's fine. But this is what apparently they call my boss, think I'm crazy and I need to be on medicine, but they think it's a program glitch. And for an example, all day yesterday, one of my heads that we call heads, but one of the blades would not set up on its 90 for me to cut the floor truss. And, but as soon as the maintenance guy comes over, it sets up on a 90 perfectly, and it ran just fine. And as soon as he walks away, it won't do it for me.
Are there any electronic components on this, Chase? I'm not familiar with this piece of equipment, but are there electronic components?
Yes, this is all electronic.
Okay.
It's all auto.
I'm wondering, Chase, is it possible you're what we call an electric person? In other words, there are people, for example, people who have been hit by lightning, they can't wear a watch anymore. The watch will just go crazy. Or if they're around electronic equipment, it just goes kaplooey, computers and that sort of thing. Have you noticed this with other pieces of electronics, Chase?
No, I've never had anything like this do this to me. So I did a little research because this saw was made in 2005. And I did a little research of the background where the saw came from. And there's this guy that ran this saw for a truss company up in Alaska. And this guy ran this saw until the day that he didn't show up for work. One day he just didn't show up for work and no one knew where he was. He never came back. No one ever heard of him. And then about a few months later, this saw got sent down to my company. We bought it. And ever since then, I started running it. It does this every single time. And finally, the maintenance guy that told me last week goes, I think this saw is haunted because it just don't like you. it just don't. And I heard your story about the couch. And I'm like, because I always listen to Coast to Coast on my way home from long trips. Coming from a side job, and I heard that couch, and it just reminded me of work.
There you go.
This saw does this to me all the time. But I love your show, man. Thank you for letting me be on the air and tell my story, man. Thank you.
Thank you, Chase. Great story. And I hope one way or the other you figure out what's going on and you resolve that issue with the saw that seems to have some gremlins in it, but only when you're operating it, Chase. That's a head scratcher. All right, to the wild card line again. Mike is in the great state of Wyoming. Mike, good morning. Welcome to Coast AM.
Good morning, Richard. How are you?
I'm well. Wyoming. What part of the state of Wyoming are you in?
I'm in the north central part of the state, a little town called Tinsleap.
All right. I've, you know, that's one of the, I would say there's only two or three states in the continental United States I've not visited. One is Rhode Island, the other is Wyoming. I need to get to Wyoming is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah,
beautiful state.
Rhode Island any day.
That's it. Exactly.
Okay. Well, I've got a story, and maybe you've seen the video, maybe you've heard it, maybe you've heard it debunked, but I've watched this video of the JFK shooting over and over and over, and it literally shows the driver turning at one point and firing one shot into Kennedy's neck or in the front of his face, and that's what.
Yes, that was William Greer. He was the Secret Service agent who was driving the presidential limousine. William Greer.
But that, well, I mean, you have to watch it really close because it's, you know, not only is it an old video, but it's obviously slowed down way slow so you can actually see him do it. But yeah, if you ever get the chance, go back and take a look at it.
Well, I've seen it a number of times, and I don't, you know, I have to be honest. I'm not seeing what you see. I mean, I do see Greer looking over his right shoulder. I see his arm coming up. I'll go back and look at it again, and maybe I'm not looking at a better, the best version. But I've seen the video. I know the story. It's an interesting theory that William Greer actually reached over and fired at the president. The problem is, there's between him and the president, you've got some glass, and then you've got that middle row of seats with the governor of Texas, Governor Connally, and his wife Nellie Connally. So he'd have to shoot sort of through the glass and through Connally without Connally noticing. I don't know.
With so much commotion going on and people freaking out, it's just hard to say. You know, it could have happened. I'm not saying that it did or didn't, but it sure looks suspicious to me.
It is an interesting piece of videotape, to be sure, Mike. I'm going to go back and I'm going to see if I can find the best version, and maybe it'll change my mind. At this point, I got to say, I don't believe William Greer, the driver of the limousine, was the one that fired the shot. But as you say, you know, I mean, how much stranger could it possibly get? Why not at least consider that angle? Because there are just so many bizarre synchronicities, as Don Jeffries was mentioning earlier, that, all bets are off. We'll look at it again. Thank you for that, Mike. Appreciate it. Let's see. Let's go to a wild card line. Carl is in Charlotte, North Carolina. Hello, Carl. Welcome to Coast.
Hey, Richard. How are you tonight?
I'm well. How are you, sir?
Doing good. I don't want to get hung up on the Kennedy thing, but and how about, I think you guys had somebody on from the Bell Labs, or the guy said that the Secret Service brought the film. It might have been a Zapruder film or somebody else's film to them, and they were looking at certain, it was like midnight, they got these guys out of bed, and they wanted to, they went down and actually got the guy to open up the photography store to get a motion picture, the player to play it on. And they were particularly interested in the frames when the car, you know, disappears behind the Dallas Freeway sign and then comes out.
Yes.
And, you know, just so many things. Like you said, how does your head snap back when you're not shot from the front, when you're supposedly shot from the back? How? What happened to the Zapruder film? Why was it doctored, you know, and taken out of his control by Life magazine? Just so many things. And I don't think it's any coincidence that Officer Tippett was similar in features to John Kennedy. He wasn't a lookalike by any means, but something might have gone on there. How does that guy just end up dead? That police officer just end up dead. But hey, I got to talk to Nez 2 weeks ago. Nesmith, I would have never guessed that was the Monkees that you guys were playing. What's the name of that song?
That one is called Birth of an Accidental Hipster, and the album is called Good Times.
Yeah.
It's a great album.
And I wanted to ask you, I know you're a big baseball fan, so real quickly, I got to ask you, what's your thoughts on the postseason coming up?
You know, after my, I've been so preoccupied with the death spiral of the Toronto Blue Jays, yeah, I just haven't paid much attention.
Didn't they beat the Red Sox once or twice?
They did. They beat the Yankees. They won the last series against the Yankees. That's just what's so frustrating about my Blue Jays is they show signs of greatness, and then but they all season long they couldn't put a string together.
Yeah,
and it looks like they're going to.
But I got work with a guy that's a Red Sox fan, so I'm an Indians fan, and our tickets, the playoff tickets, sold out in 15 minutes. I saw on one of the Cleveland TV station websites.
I would love to see the Tribe win one
series. Who do you think is going to be make it to the World Series, American National League? What about the Dodgers?
Well, yeah, I'm gonna go with the Tribe versus the Dodgers, and my gut is telling me the Tribe, and that was my late father's favorite team before the Blue Jays came on board back in the mid to late 70s. So, I want the Tribe to win one for my dad.
Good luck to Toronto. Okay.
All right. There's always next year. Thank you so much, Carl, for checking in. All right. Do we have time? Yeah, we can squeeze in another one. Sure. Keith is in Arnold, Missouri. Hey, Keith, welcome to Coast.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you, sir?
Oh, fair to partly.
all right.
Anyway, I was thinking about the comment that you made about Kennedy and Khrushchev trying to get together and mix the space program.
Well, one of the callers had wondered about a shared space program.
Yeah, well, I heard that. I could see where somebody wouldn't want that to happen back in that period of time. I mean, we're just coming out of the McCarthy period, you know, where everybody who looked cross-eyed was a communist, you know what I mean?
Right, right.
And I'm looking back at that, and I'm considering our space program as it's progressed so far, and I feel that we're like 50 years behind. I mean, Obama has cut the shuttle program before the International Space Station is established, basically, and every time we shoot up a rocket, every other rocket blows up off the pad, and that seems a little odd to me. I mean, my one friend says that they play the Gilligan's theme song every time they shoot a rocket up to the platform.
Right, right. Are you, Keith, one that subscribes to the idea of a secret space program? In other words, the Gemini, Mercury, Apollo programs, even the shuttle program was all really kind of window dressing. That in fact, you know, behind the scenes, we have a far more advanced space program. I don't know if we're talking about anti-gravitics, but apparently a lot of these.
I have seen them float aluminum discs on a magnetic field. I've seen
right,
that.
Right.
So
right.
I could have theorized that there's a magnetic drive.
Right. That's the Townsend Brown effect, right?
Yeah, I think so. I'm not familiar with their effect. In fact, when I was a kid, I had a magnetic spool on an iron rod, and I had these aluminum discs that we were supposed to put it on a low-level power situation in the electronics class in high school, and what I did is I jacked the power all the way up and then turned it on and blew out a window. So.
Right. Yeah, I think there is a connection between high voltage electricity and anti-gravitics. In fact, next month, I'm hosting Tim Schwartz is going to come on, and he wrote a book called The Lost Journals of Tesla. And one of the things that apparently was carted away, and I think when he died in 43 at the New Yorker, the FBI and the Office of Alien Properties came in and swept away about two truckloads of Tesla documents, not only from the New Yorker, but he had stuff stashed all over Manhattan, including a laboratory. Included in that was his notes on his anti-gravitic device. And that involved, you know, high voltage electricity and basically turning oxygen molecules into ionizing them and so forth. So I don't know. It's funny how, you know, in the 1950s, Boeing and other places were talking about we're on the cusp of breaking, you know, of getting into anti-gravitics, and then all of a sudden, nothing. It was like an iron curtain descended, a complete blackout, suppression. All right, here's Elvis Presley taking us into the break. One of my favorite songs from The King, You Gave Me a Mountain. More open lines when we come back here on Coast to Coast AM.